Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. You are listening to Voices for Justice. I'm your host, Michelle Bart. And tonight, March 25th, 2011, we sit down with Seattle attorney Ann Bremner, who will give us an update on Amanda Knox, the Seattle student who has been prosecuted in Italy for the murder of her roommate. Ann will bring us up to date. Phone lines are open. The call-in number is 347-838-8622. Again, that number is 347-838-8622. The chat room is also open. Log on to blogtalkradio.com/helpingheroes and click chat. In summary, Amanda arrived in Italy September 2007, and then on November 2nd, 2007, her roommate Meredith Kircher's body was found. A trial followed with what I call, and this is an opinion, staged evidence. She was found guilty of murder, and now her parents are also finding themselves in a trial of their own. And along the way, both cases appear to be unjust by American standards. So we go to Ann Bremner and we say, welcome back, Ann.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Thank you for being here. Now, did we miss anything? Did I miss anything in that summary of where this case has gone from the time she left Seattle in 2007 until today?
Well, no. I mean, only that it's been, you know, a case with so many twists and turns where her pretrial hearing lasted a year, and it was secret before she was charged and went to trial. And during that, there was a lot of salacious information, false information leaked to the tabloid press. But you got it. I mean, it's been a long, strange trip, and it's not over.
Strange is an understatement.
I know. Bizarre.
I'd like to say we wouldn't see this in American courtrooms, but then again, there's always something. But is this unjust by American standards? Would this be happening here in America?
The reason it wouldn't happen here in America is because we only hold someone for 72 hours before they're charged, and in Italy, they held her a year. I think here in America, with the 72-hour rule and our probable cause standard to charge, she would never have been charged with a crime. So the answer is no, it would not happen in America. But one caveat, look at the Duke LaCrosse case. That went on for quite a while, and it was very similar to this case in terms of, you know, innuendo leading to, you know, charging of people where the prosecutor ultimately was prosecuted and convicted and disbarred himself. So you can have a rogue prosecutor in the U.S., like we have in Italy in Amanda's case.
For those listening and those in the chat room, if you want to learn more about the case as we go along, visit friendsofamanda.org. And to learn more about Ann Bremner, you can go to annbremner.com. So I guess last time we had you on, we went through all the forensics, which there are none.
Right.
We went through the case step by step. And again, you know, I'm not a lawyer or anything, but obviously when forensics are not there, DNA is not there, and they had no evidence except for her behavior, then
right.
I would think that that's an unjust situation. So with an American girl in Italy, has the Secretary of State Hillary Clinton or President Obama come to the table yet on this case?
No, not publicly. You know, she's been called an innocent abroad. That's the kind of case where you want to see the State Department and ultimately the White House involved, especially because there were human rights and international law violations during her questioning in other areas, arguably. And we even heard from our own senator in Washington State, Marie Cantwell, that she was going to work with, or at least contact Hillary Clinton. This is back at the time of the conviction, and to follow up with her. But we've heard kind of a deafening silence, which is troubling. I mean, because Amanda's been there for 3 years for a crime she didn't commit.
Exactly, for a crime that she didn't commit. And again, for somebody to be held this long and then prosecuted,
mm-hmm.
and the prosecutor himself, as you said, has also gone through his own legal issues. what could be going through Amanda's mindset as to, does she feel, or have you spoken with her, does she feel helpless, does she, or hopeless, or does she think she's going to end up being there to serve this time, and then, what is it, a 26-year sentence?
Yes. I mean, I've talked to her, and of course to her family, and you know, she's a pretty strong girl. She's very impressive. She's very, very intelligent, and she's very resilient. On the other hand, anybody in the situation would start to feel very apprehensive when the system has been so unfair, arguably, including the fact that the jurors could watch all the media, they could read all the newspapers, she wasn't allowed to select jurors, these were people appointed to her case, she was vilified in the press with false information, called Foxy Noxy, called a ritualistic sex slayer, you know, et cetera. It was all stacked against her. And so it's like the Midnight Express, they called it the Mignini Express, which is the name of the prosecutor, you know, with Fellini Forensics. It was surreal. And yet there she sits 3 years later in a jail in Perugia, Italy.
And nothing comes with what the prosecutor had basically this wasn't the first time he's done a case that
no.
seemed stacked or planted, correct?
Correct. There's a book that's a bestseller. It's called The Monster of Florence, a New York Times bestseller where he did the same thing, you know, saying that these were ritualistic, satanic cult slayings, and even tried to prosecute the author, Douglas Preston, who's part of our group, Friends of Amanda Knox. That's going to be made into a movie, and George Clooney actually is going to play Doug Preston, but it's not the first time. Plus, he was convicted for abuse of office in Italy.
A movie on his situation, his life.
Yes.
Right. Oh, okay. Speaking of movies, Lifetime aired, which we turned it off. We couldn't even watch it. It looked so.
Yeah.
It looked so strange. I don't know what word to use for it. But Lifetime did air that. What did you or the family, or does Amanda even know about the Lifetime show that aired?
Well, Amanda was quoted publicly saying that she threw up, you know, when she saw the trailers. And, you know, the trailers showed her involved in the homicide itself, showed Rudy Gadet being kind to Meredith during the assaults, showed her in the room involved in some kind of a sex ritual. These were all the trailers. So she threw up when she saw those. Her family... I think her stepfather used the word crap when to describe the movie, and I guess that's a great description. I didn't see the movie the night that it aired. I had to wait. I watched it when it re-aired, and it was just so irresponsible, you know, to make her look like this kind of wanton, over-sexualized, silly girl who... you know, could have been involved in this, and they leave it really murky, as if, you know, this is just a strange person that got really high and led her boyfriend into a slaying, et cetera. And it ends up on a note where I thought that the two mothers, the mother of Meredith and Amanda's mother, looked at each other kind of knowingly like, you know, that's Amanda, you know. And I thought, oh, that's just horrible, like a movie like The Bad Seed or something. From the 50s.
You know, it's ironic that Lifetime, who's had such a voice for women and girls, would air something without doing more in-depth research on
right.
how the prosecution took place. Because yeah. anybody that has any brain in their head can see that a teenage girl, obviously, that did a ranting and a raving alleged murder of this nature, not to even leave a stitch of DNA of her own in that room, there's no way that she could have gotten away with it. And yet, they prosecuted a young girl that, you know, they had nothing on.
And that was the thing,
just,
you know.
I find it ludicrous.
It is ludicrous. And if you listen to some of the accounts from the reasoning that they found probable cause in Italy, there were these things. She went out for pizza for dinner. They thought that was strange. You know, a murderess must do something like that. Number two, she shopped for underwear. Because looking for lingerie, they said it was sexual, and she was, you know, talking horseplay with Raffaele. Her place was a crime scene. She didn't have any clothes. And the person that supposedly overheard them didn't speak English, and they were speaking in English. That was number two. And number three was the fact that they were kissing near the scene. And that's very well publicized, the photographs of them comforting each other. And that's it. Oh, of course, cartwheels later at the police station. They say.
Comforting is, I would say it was more of a comforting kiss. It
exactly.
wasn't like that they were making
right.
out. And as for underwear, she goes to shop for underwear, whether it's cotton briefs or thongs.
Right.
You're going to shop for underwear if you can't get into your house to get clothing for the next
exactly.
few days.
Exactly. And so what was benign, what was innocent behavior, which was totally explainable, was taken as inculpatory, you know, sinister, sexual, and leading to the fact and the conclusion that she was involved in this, you know, ritualistic sex slaying of Meredith. And also it's Halloween. And I think that kind of in this medieval town of Perugia with this American girl that, you know, that I think the Italians looked at her in the press in a way that was pretty askance. And then Menini himself came up with this sex slaying without any evidence. And yet that seemed to kind of carry the day in the public imagination.
You know, they've compared in many media outlets this case with the Casey Anthony case.
I know.
And how the strange coincidences that, you know, you've got a child missing and you go out and dance, or your roommate was just murdered and you're doing cartwheels. And again, perception is everything, and I think character assassination that takes place in the media definitely, no matter if you're in Italy or America, is going to taint a jury pool. And obviously this was the case with Amanda's situation.
And I've actually talked to Jose Baez, Casey's lawyer, about this, just because there are those parallels. And, you know, we tend to vilify female defendants in certain cases like this, where, you know, they may be dancing, they may be in a hot body contest, they're attractive, you know, all these kinds of things. You know, Raffaele is kind of a, you know, an also-ran. We hear very little about him, but Amanda, you know, is the dubious star of this, you know, hideous, you know, Italian opera. But the fact is that we do vilify these people and have in these cases. But the question I've always had is, what's really admissible? Is it admissible in Casey Anthony's case that she went to a hot body contest? You know, is it admissible in Amanda Knox's case that she did a cartwheel at the police station? Well, it wasn't Amanda's case. All of it came in, including the fact that she wasn't very clean as a roommate, that she had bickered with Meredith, that, you know, that she had other boyfriends. I mean, a lot of things that wouldn't come in the U.S. into evidence.
In regards to Amanda's trial, she was prosecuted. Didn't she get more years than the other two guys?
Yeah, she got one more year than Raffaele.
What was the reasoning behind that?
It was because, as I understand it, you know, I'm trying to remember now if that had to do with her saying that she was hit on the head. But she got one more year than Raffaele. And they stated a reason for it. There's been so much in this case for so long. I'm in front of my computer. I'll look it up right now. But there was a stated reason by the jury to give her one more year. Now, keep in mind, the prosecutor on the appeal now is asking for life. So unlike the U.S., they can, the prosecutor, there's no double jeopardy, can ask for life. And, of course, Rudy had his sentence reduced a couple of times through the process. So, and there's no good time in Italy. She would serve the full time.
So let's fast forward with her parents. What is the reasoning behind trying to incarcerate those two?
Well, it's another strange thing about Italy. And I should say, you know, we in the Friends of Amanda Knox don't want to unduly criticize Italy. You know, they're a sovereign nation. They have Roman law, which is far more established than our common law from Britain. And it's a wonderful system. However, this case has had a rogue prosecutor, and we think, you know, inappropriate results for media and the prosecutor's own interests, basically having input into this going awry, the prosecution. But the fact of the matter is that these, you know, a case like this, I'm sorry, I've got a cold. So what did you ask me again?
Oh, no problem. No problem.
What was it, the last part of your question?
I was just curious as to why her parents are now the target of a prosecution.
Thank you. I've had a cold all week. In the U.S., we have free speech, First Amendment. In Italy, they don't. So they have criminal libel, and that can come from what you say in court. So when Amanda said that she got hit in the head in the interrogation, when the parents repeated it to a reporter, they got charged with libel, which is criminal. And Amanda's charged, too.
Now, is that because they said it in Italy, or what about all the people that have said anything about people part of this case from all over the world?
Well,
why aren't they being charged?
Well, the prosecutor tried to charge the West Seattle Herald out here in Seattle, which doesn't even have an international section, but that went nowhere. But there's been some media folks in Italy charged with libel, too.
Really?
Yes.
Well, I'll watch what I say.
I know. I mean, that's what I'm saying. You don't want to go to Italy if you're talking about this case, because they get jurisdiction once you step on their shores.
Well, if you don't want to criticize the people of Italy and the Italian government, but yet they're not stepping in and our government's not stepping in to say something is wrong with this situation. Even Italy, you have to see the situation and say, we've just prosecuted one of our own because he staged crime scenes, and yet nobody is stepping in to have a voice, not only for justice for Amanda, but all of the other cases and all of the other people that may be serving time unjustly.
Well, and here's what they've done is that they brought in an international law lawyer, Ted Simon, who's from Philadelphia, who's handling this, State Department aspect. And as far as we know, there's work being done behind the scenes, and I'm very hopeful about that. Do I want to not criticize Italy? In certain respects, I don't. In other respects, I want to shout from the rooftops that this case is outrageous. But it's really outrageous because of this prosecutor and the way this case has been handled in the media. And, their system itself is not that bad, because on appeal, you can fare far better than you can here in the United States. So it's kind of a reverse system from ours, that you have like 3 bites at the apple in Italy. Here you pretty much have 1.5. So there's some real advantages there. But I think this case was so highly publicized with the prosecutor that was hell-bent on convicting her where there was no evidence and maligning her in the press and planting false information that went worldwide every day, that there was no way she'd have a fair trial. And I don't think her appeal will be fair either.
Have you ever seen any cases internationally or in America that has had so many organizations or organized groups, I should say, that believe an individual is so innocent compared to guilty? Hey, we had many of them for O.J. Simpson, but
yeah.
for in favor of, when you look for Amanda Knox groups, there is hundreds of them.
They're
wanting
everywhere.
To free her.
They're everywhere, and we have Donald Trump saying boycott Italy. Next, he's going to run for president. That we've got senators saying that she's innocent. We have people, all over the world saying that she's innocent. We get contacted constantly with people that want to help. When I get on airplanes, walk down the street, I have people say, free Amanda Knox. All over the country, all over the world, people are outraged because injustice anywhere is injustice everywhere. And here we are in Seattle. This is our girl. She went to school here. She worked a number of jobs to get to Italy. I think what resonates with people is that could be my child who worked these jobs to get to school, to study abroad for a semester, to do these things to, carry forth with her dreams. And all of a sudden, she's in the midst of this complete, never-ending nightmare. And people want to get her out.
Right, exactly. And you're talking a month and a half from the time she landed in Italy to the time her nightmare started.
That's exactly right.
So they want us to believe that this straight-laced young girl from Seattle, the Pacific Northwest, went over there and within a month and a half snapped and yet still didn't leave any DNA and forensics behind. That's hard for me to understand. And I think a lot of other people that may not be, you know, in law knows forensics can see through those lines. And I was mentioning, I was speaking to a forensic expert today regarding another case, and, you know, it's amazing that when we now in the 21st century have forensics and science that can lead us to the conclusion of the truth, that we choose not to use it, or we use it against something.
Exactly.
And that's what this case is making me think.
You know, when I was a prosecutor, I remember as I was about ready to leave the office and go into private practice, someone came and presented to us about DNA evidence. And they said, this is going to change criminal law. And they showed us how you do the comparisons. It was all brand new. And I thought to myself, prosecutors are going to become obsolete. This is just science. It's like so overwhelming. They can, you know, they don't need us. And then you look at what happened in O.J., then you look at Amanda Knox and other cases. There's no DNA evidence of Amanda Knox. There is a Rudy Gaudet. There's no fingerprint, no hair, no fiber, no thread, no any kind of marked blood of her, nothing, in a room where there was supposedly a violent, sexual, ritualistic slaying by three people. And one other thing, they didn't know each other per se before, so how in the heck do three kids in Perugia get together and say, hey, let's kill this girl in a ritualistic slaying, you know, an attempt to rape her, just for fun. I mean, it just doesn't make
sense. I don't see that happening.
Absolutely not. And the final thing is that women, you know, of course, the gentler gender, we don't tend to commit these kind of crimes. It's pretty rare. And so you have to ask, you know, what did something snap in her? Did she suddenly become this crazed person? I mean, none of those things are present. And if there's no physical evidence, and there is none, and I know you've talked to Larry Kobolinski, and he agrees, and now the DNA we're seeing in the independent review bears out that there's no physical evidence, you got to let her go.
You can't.
You got to let her go.
Some of the best people that have, made their living or made their life through criminal activity, they can't even leave a crime scene without leaving DNA. So it's hard when you look at the cases, such as this case and the Casey Anthony case, that you can do such a vicious crime, accident, non-accident, whatever the perception may be, and yet there is no DNA evidence for you, you know, at the crime scene. And this crime scene was, it was horrible,
it was
based on the photos. It was very violent. Not even a footprint was in that room.
No.
Not even a handprint on the door. And the only thing that they had of hers was a knife at his apartment, which could have easily been staged because that's easy to pick up and plant.
Right, and there's one thing we always said as prosecutors, in any homicide, the perpetrator takes something away and leaves something behind, period. They're going to. She left nothing behind, and she took nothing away. But the other thing is, sure, it could be planted, but we've found now with the independent review, there's no DNA to measure. That's what the experts have said. They can't say it's tied to anything. And they took it from his drawer and put it in a shoebox and then took it in for analysis. So there you go. I mean, even the experts here have always said, even with what was introduced at trial, that there wasn't a match in any way with Meredith, you know, or with there was some with Amanda on the handle consistent with cooking with the knife, maybe. That's it. They don't have standards for the level of certainty with DNA that we have in the United States. That's why it came in Italy. And
so
now
the
on the independent review.
That they did have I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, on the independent review, they said it was insufficient to measure.
So there was an independent review from somebody from the United States?
And in Italy. See, part of the appeal was saying that there should be an independent review, and that was granted. And now we're seeing some of those results now.
And so are those evidence, is that information able to be brought back up in the appeal process?
Yes.
And could it be a benefit or could it be a more hindrance towards her case?
It's hard to say, you know, because they'll always come up with an explanation in Italy. They'll say it got used up in the testing. You know, they'll say that that's what happens with DNA, is that as you test, you lose parts of the sample, you know, things like that. So it doesn't mean anything.
For our listeners and the folks in the chat room, we're speaking with Ann Bremner, a Seattle-based attorney on the Amanda Knox case. You can visit friendsofamanda.org for more information. That website is full of information regarding this case and Amanda. And there's a place where you can also make a donation to her defense and all of that with the family. And we encourage you to call in and ask your questions so that you too can have a voice for justice for Amanda Knox. The number is 347-838-8622. Unlike, as I was saying, with Larry Kobolinski, who is a forensic scientist out on the East Coast of the United States, he wanted to say some things the other night while he was on one of the shows on HLN. And because of live television, sometimes attorneys like yourself or Jose Baez or forensic experts like Larry or even doctors like Dr. Dale Archer, you don't have that ability to really say what's on your mind or finish the sentence. So for the next 20 minutes, I want you to be able to tell the listeners how they can help, what they can be doing, and any other information you want to make public so that listeners and viewers can understand the significance of what has really happened to this young lady and her family.
That's wonderful. Thanks for the opportunity, Michelle. It's a big step forward for justice for Amanda Knox.
Definitely. So where are we now, and what can we be doing to help or, you know, and be behind the movement, if you will, of getting Amanda Knox back home?
First of all, you mentioned the site to help financially, and that's amandadefensefund.org. And you can help financially or donate flight miles or things like that. The family rotates monthly, so there's always somebody in Italy with her. But that's important. What's important, though, is on our site, amandaknox.org, is that we've got addresses there to write to the State Department, to write to Obama, to write to Hillary Clinton, and to have all of our voices heard. This is a complete injustice. And we've all waited for years for something to be done, and nothing's happening. She's still sitting there, and there's been no action by our government to do anything. And I think that if there's enough ruckus out there, which I just don't think there's been so far, I mean, you can have a silent majority that says, you know what, she's getting a raw deal. But it's got to be vocal, and it's got to be, you know, a real movement to free Amanda Knox. And for all of your listeners and those that are in the chat rooms, et cetera, to just stand up and say, we're not going to put up with this. It is so unfair for one of our own, whether she's from Seattle, New York, New Mexico, Dallas, it doesn't matter. We can't have people from the United States being treated like this in other countries. And I'll tell you something, when we have people from other countries here in the United States, we often see their State Departments make some noise and attempt to intervene. So it's not unusual. It's just called the comedy, C-O-M-I-T-Y, of nations. That we all try to cooperate and treat people with respect and the same equal human rights. And she's not being afforded those, where she was abused in the questioning. And here's the kicker. When she was questioned, it was for scores of hours. There was no interpreter certified. There was no lawyer. And there was physical force, and it wasn't recorded. Not being recorded is a violation of international law at a minimum. The other things would be as well. That's enough for the State Department to get involved and to say, we can get her out. And I don't
why
know why that hasn't happened. I can't tell you. I can only say that, you know, my conclusion would be that they just haven't had enough you know, squeaky wheels out there. I mean, people out there saying enough already because they can, but they haven't.
So folks need to go to your website, friendsofamanda.org, and be able to click on the links, write letters to the president, write letters to Hillary Clinton, and let's get the White House behind this particular case. There's many of them, I'm sure, but Amanda Knox's case obviously is the one that everyone's heard about lately.
Right, and, you know, just, I mean, look at what Bill Clinton did with Lisa Ling's sister. You know, look at the kinds of things he's been able to do over the years. So why is Amanda Knox rotting in Italy?
Do you think it's because that our government may think that she is guilty?
I wonder about that. I wonder if there was some kind of entrenchment in the beginning with all that bad press that made some people say, oh, geez, you know, she really bad, you know, throw away the key, and then they kind of just let it go. And that was all the bad publicity. We didn't get involved.
You would think, though, before that they would make their determination or make their minds up that they would fly out there and sit down with her to actually hear her side of it before they pass judgment on what the media has portrayed her to be.
I think the problem was, again, I go back to the fact that this thing kind of festered for a year in those secret pretrial hearings before she was charged. We were not involved in the case until about the end of that time. And then we came in to kind of try to turn around the super tanker of false and salacious information in the press. And I think that there was so much damage done during that year that it was that super tanker in a lot of ways we were able to move, but we weren't able to move it all the way around. And so I think when you're dealing with the government stepping forward, you know, they've just been disinclined to do so.
And how is her family holding up?
You know, they're great people. And they're, you know, I don't know how to describe them. I mean, they're all kind of have different ways of dealing with this. But the thing they're all unified in is that they're going to do everything to be there and to make sure she gets out. I mean, they're just never, 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 never going to quit. I mean, that's just the way they are. That goes from grandma to her aunts to her mom, her dad, her stepmom, her sister, her stepsisters. You know, everybody is very committed to her. And they have a phone call every weekend. They all stand and pass the phone around. As I said, they have one person over there each month, and they do global emails, done them for years, of updates about Amanda, how she's doing in jail, you know, what's the latest, you know, et cetera. And they're more about her than they are about the case, which I think is important to kind of, you know, talk about the girl herself and the case, of course, we see just all over the headlines. And then, of course, you know, there are more recent things where there's been this movie and, you know, trying to kind of glamorize or in some ways kind of damn her in a movie. I'm not sure, or if it's a combination of both, you know, kind of this, you know, evil temptress murderer. That's been really, really upsetting because the family had felt like finally with the appeal they were getting some independent forensic review, and then all of a sudden this movie comes out.
It's ironic that, you know, that a network like Lifetime would be able to do that film that exposed her in a light which she obviously did not authorize. And yet that's the, like you were saying, Freedom of Speech Act, correct? Where she can't go back and sue anybody for any kind of defamation of character against her.
Well, you know, what she's trying to do, part of it is their arguments in the public domain. So, you know, and they're trying to say that she doesn't have any real rights to this. So they don't need to consult her. And, you know, because it's all in the public record in the trial, that's what they kept coming back to, is we're just saying what was happened in the trial from the transcripts. But she's trying still in Italy to block it from being disseminated on the web, that she doesn't want this all over Italy. And that action is still pending. And that's important because she's going to have jurors in the appeal again.
When is that date? Do you know?
Well, she's got the first dates. There's not a set date on that yet. She's got dates in May of the 9th and the 21st of the release of the reports on the independent review of evidence, and then the second date is for a hearing regarding the review of the independent evidence. So it's kind of a two-part appeal. I mean, part of it is what we call de novo review, which is reviewing evidence anew for the first time. And the second part of it is, you know, dealing with a potential reduction of sentence. So we don't have that in the U.S., really. What we have in the U.S. is you review errors of law. You know, what were the errors of law? And you reveal, they also review the sufficiency of evidence. But that's a tough sell because you have to show that no reasonable trier of fact would have found her guilty. And that's a tough standard in America. So it's a better system in Italy on appeal.
So on the appeal, do you have any speculation on how it will go, in your opinion?
You know, the hard thing for me is I'm here in Seattle. I've never gone to Italy, and now I can't, so I'll probably get arrested by Menini for libel. But I think that I'm hopeful that at the end of the day, she'll at least see a reduction. Am I hopeful she'll be freed? Not without intervention of the White House and the State Department. I'm just not hopeful.
So we have 2 months. Do you think that more voices and more letters of the people listening, and then the people in the chat room, if they log on and send their voices and carry their voices to the White House, that May 19th and 21st may show a little bit more support for Amanda Knox?
Absolutely. And I think it's so wonderful you're showcasing this case again, because it's so important for voices to be heard, you know, from all over the world, to tell the White House and the State Department that this is an injustice that needs to stop. And people won't stand for it. We don't stand for that in the U.S., and we can't, and we won't.
Well, I can tell you that a lot of the groups that I have found on Amanda Knox sure have a lot of followers. You're talking thousands and thousands.
Right.
If every one of them sent a letter, I think it would carry a little bit more weight than what's happening right now.
I think so, too. And it's the same old thing I think you see in a lot of cases, which is people say, well, of course people know that there's, you know, there's not enough evidence to convict her. And some people say, well, she must have been there, you know, whatever else. But the fact is that, you know, every person has a public, you know, every private person has a public responsibility. And we don't always do that. We kind of sit back and say, well, I know what I think, and it's all going to work out. You need to act publicly. You need to act out your convictions, whether it's helping Amanda Knox, you know, helping victims in Japan, you know, or anything else, or people need your help. And she needs everyone's help right now.
So if you have any questions for Ann Bremner and you want to help out, but you want to ask some questions first, please call 347-838-8622. We have a few more minutes, and she will take your calls. I know there's quite a bit of people in the chat room. If you'd like to just text or write your questions in the chat room, I'll be happy to ask her. So what about the court case against her parents? Now, do you see that, you know, ending, or do you think that that's going to escalate?
I think the timing was so suspect, because it was, in my opinion, filed as a way to keep them from coming to Italy and seeing her and supporting her. Because as long as they're in the U.S., then they're kind of untouchable. But if they're in Italy, then there's jurisdiction over their persons. But they're not to be dissuaded, and they're going to support their daughter, you know, in any event. Would it result in substantial jail time? I don't know, but it's criminal. And they're staying there, you know, in any event. But she's charged, they're charged, and journalists are charged. So it's what's really upsetting is it's based on what was said in connection with the defense of a case. So it's not just, what did you say about a case? It's what did you say in court about your own defense? Her parents just repeated that, and they're all charged, including Amanda, with criminal libel or defamation.
Amazing.
It's amazing.
Just amazing.
It is.
I noticed that there were two new books out on Amazon. We posted those on our blog on Blog Talk Radio. Can you tell us a little bit about those books and the authors behind it?
Well, Mark Waterbury has a new one out that's excellent, and he's part of our group, the Friends of Amanda Knox, where he's gone through the forensic evidence, you know, and lack of evidence in the case, and it's been very popular, and he's actually helped me with writing a number of blog pieces on the forensics in this case because they're, you know, difficult to understand in terms of the theories. So I highly recommend that book to everybody. It's selling really well, and it's a great book that basically recounts the defense of Amanda Knox and the lack of any evidence whatsoever against her. And then there's been a number of other ones. Are you talking about the one from Candace Dempsey, Barbie Nadal?
Yeah, I believe so. Let me take a look. I'll look up.
There's been about eight books. Candace Dempsey wrote a blog called Italian Woman at the Table for the Seattle PI, the Post Intelligence, or one of our newspapers. It's online only. And then she wrote a book, and she's been at the trial. And she also believes in Amanda's innocence, and she's done a wonderful job of recounting the evidence in the case and the lack of evidence about Amanda Knox and the horrific, you know, press accounts about Amanda Knox. She's also talked about, and she's talked about this publicly, the attacks that you get when you come out in favor of Amanda Knox. There can be some really vicious internet attacks. They're horrible. I've had them, she's had them, you know, we've all had them. But so she talks about that, and so I guess there's strength in numbers for those of us that have been attacked, but we haven't in any event. There's one by Barbie Nadal called Angel Face, and that's one that is not embraced by the family in any way, shape, or form. I have respect for her, but it's not one that recounts the facts accurately in any way, including the fact that she never called herself Angel Face, although that's stated by her. And then there's other, you know, various and sundry books, including one of interviews of her in jail and a book about her sex life. And, you know, you can go on and on. I'm sure there'll be another 10 books before the year is out. But
what about
book
the one
Mark's
from Bruce Fisher?
Well, Bruce is also great. He's got a blog called Injustice in Perugia, and his is wonderful. And I neglected to mention him, and I highly recommend Bruce's as well. He's been a tireless advocate for Amanda Knox. So we're very lucky to have people like this that take the time to look at the real facts and show that we truly have an innocent abroad in Perugia, Italy.
Do you know if anybody from the State Department has actually even been to friendsofamanda.org?
I don't know. And we've translated the site into many different languages.
Very nice.
Thank you. We have many, and Tom Wright is to be credited for that. He's done a great job. But we have many, many, you know, hits on the site and people very interested. But I don't know if we've heard from State Department people, you know, taking a look at what we've got. But we've tried to be so comprehensive in the information that we put out there and objective. I mean, it's not a site where we're out advocating as much as we're putting out these are the facts. These are the things you can click on. Here's a press kit. Here's what the evidence is. It's not a site that is, you know, biased in any way. It tries to be as objective as possible, which I applaud because I think it's important in a huge case like this.
It's ironic. I was having that same conversation with Dr. Kobolinski today. He's a scientist, and no matter who he's testifying for, he tries to stay on the fence post and stay neutral because that's his profession, and he depicts the evidence and the findings.
Right.
And you really cannot, you know, disagree with science. You know, the science is there. There's a reason it's there. And in this particular case, there is no science there against Amanda.
And that's another line that I've always used when I was a prosecutor. You know, witnesses can and do lie. They can be mistaken. But the evidence never lies. It can't.
Mm-hmm.
It's a science. And that's the Amanda Knox case. It's exactly right.
And others will, you know, there's plenty of journalists out there that always say, follow the money. Well, what was her reasoning for allegedly doing this? You know, and like you said, most women and girls, they don't typically do a case, a heinous case like this against another woman or
they
a man
don't.
For that matter.
They don't. And
you know,
I have Amanda's bank records. I have Amanda's emails. I have her phone records. I mean, she had plenty of money, not a ton, but and she didn't have a financial motive. I've got the phone records of her trying to find Meredith. I've got her emails of a completely innocent, you know, during the time in question. I mean, here's a girl that should have gotten on a plane and come home, but she was so innocent and so trusting, she stayed. And now she's staying potentially forever.
That's kind of good advice, I guess, for those that travel abroad for any reason. If you see a murder or any kind of criminal activity, you might as well just get on a plane and run for the hills.
Run for the hills.
Get on a plane and then deal with it later.
Run for your life, because she would never have been extradited. They'd be like, what? There's no connection with her. But yet here she sits there for being, you know, completely trusting. And you know who did run was Rudy Gaudet. The guilty one.
Yeah,
well,
you keep bringing him up, and I know that so many people in the beginning had talked about him and how, you know, all of a sudden then he started throwing these two under a bus and everything else. But the evidence showed him in the room.
The evidence showed him not only in the room, it showed, like, bloody fingerprints down the wall. It showed his fingerprints on Meredith's purse and showed his DNA in her body. I mean, it was overwhelming.
And wasn't his thumbprint on her bra clasp?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, he was everywhere forensically in that room. And he also fled to Germany and had to be brought back. But he also, on the phone to somebody on Skype, actually said that he had had sex with Meredith that night. So they had plenty of evidence on him. And they also had evidence that he'd left in the toilet that was tied to him forensically.
So forensically, he's all over that house,
yeah.
On her property, on her,
right.
In the bathroom, everywhere, and yet Amanda gets more years than he does?
Exactly. Exactly. And the part of the reason, and that's another thing that's kind of foreign to us in the U.S., but he chose a fast-track trial, and that was tried during their preliminary hearing. So if they went to the hearing about whether or not there was enough to charge him, the same evidence was used to decide whether he was guilty. And so if you do that in Italy, you get a lesser sentence. So it's kind of like a slow guilty plea where you make a deal and say, I think I'm going to be found guilty, and then they give you less time. But then he started to come out on appeal and say things about them, like Amanda was there, I was in the bathroom, you know, I heard somebody out there that killed her. I mean, just incredible things. I had earphones on in the bathroom, and, you know, someone went and killed Meredith.
Amazing. Just
it's amazing.
Well, folks, listening again, you have the power to be the voice for justice. So log on to www.friendsofamanda.org. Find out how you can make a difference. Learn more about Ann Bremner at annbremner.com. And any last thoughts you want to leave us with, and we'll pick this up again in May. May is going to be a very busy news month, huh?
It's going to be. It is going to be. And I just can't thank you enough for showcasing this, because it's such an important case, and it's gotten, of course, we know, huge international press, but for many of the wrong reasons. And I think the last thing I want to say is, you know, it's a case that's purportedly salacious. It's a case that, you know, captures the public imagination. It's a case that says, how could a girl that seems so innocent become, you know, so evil? And would you know evil if she lived next door? She seems so nice and appropriate and, you know, went to a prep school and was a nice family girl. How did she become something else? I mean, those are the things that kind of capture our imagination. But when you couple that with the Italian system and the kind of media that started in the beginning about Amanda, you know, with the underwear and the kissing and the sex slang and the Halloween, and we used to say that, you know, every day is Halloween, the Menini, the crucifix in the courtroom, kind of the medieval atmosphere, in a lot of ways saying these, you know, wanton American girls lead our boys, you know, astray, like, you know, like Raffaele Sollicito. And the fact of the matter is, it's all fiction. It's all fiction, and enough's enough. You know, if this was entertainment, that's too bad. But it has been to a certain extent. And I think that's got to end.
It's a shame.
It's a shame. And I think we as Americans need to just stand up and take this over and own it and say, we're not going to let this happen. We don't care if you're going to tell us that this is our country and we can do what we want. It's not about any of those things. It's about this case. It's about this girl. It's about this prosecutor. It's about this media. And it's got to end. It's not about anything else. And hopefully,
you all are
if that
on
voice
Facebook
is heard,
also, right?
Yeah, we've got Amanda Knox, a number of Facebook pages for Amanda Knox, Free Amanda Knox, a number of Amanda Knox pages. But I still think the best one is friendsofamanda.org in terms of people being able to get the links for writing to the right people. Because it's
definitely. And you have every bit of evidence there, too.
We do.
You know,
and so,
where people can read fact by fact of what really happened and what really was more or less the case summary and the evidence that they had and didn't have. And so it's a great place to go. Again, that's
thanks.
friendsofamanda.org. Let's come back to this again in May.
Let's
again,
do.
Like I said, May is going to be a busy news month with between her and I can just see the headlines now between Amanda Knox's appeal trial and Casey Anthony going to trial.
Right.
I just can see the headlines already.
I know, you're exactly
right. But let's all band together, write our letters. Thank you again, Anne, for joining us. We will reevaluate this and bring it back to light in May here on Voices for Justice. Thank you for being the advocate, definitely, that you are, not only to your own clients, but also to those that need a voice as well, like Amanda.
Well,
our next show is thank you very much. Our next show is April 23rd. It's the beginning of our Casey Anthony reports, and I hope everyone will join us. As Anne mentioned tonight, one of the books that someone wrote about was how good people like yourself, Anne, gets slammed in either the media or more so the blogs when you go to bat for somebody. And I know that feeling as well. And so
yeah,
we'll be exploring the Casey Anthony case. And again, you know, Voices for Justice is a platform for yourself and forensic experts like Dr. Kobolinski and many other different shows that we've had on. Our purpose is to have a voice for justice to make sure that cases like Amanda, you know, get the justice that they need. Whether you think she's guilty or think she's innocent, the same goes for Casey. You know, show me the evidence and
yeah,
prove it, and then I wouldn't be having you on the show. Because
yeah,
this is for a voice for justice, and right now I don't think Amanda's case has shown that. Justice has not prevailed because that young lady should be home here in Seattle. So,
sure.
But I hope everyone will join us again in April. Until then, keep using your voices to have a voice for justice for those that can't right now. And again, thanks again, Anne, and I hope you feel
my
better.
Pleasure. Oh, thanks so much.
Thank you so much
for having me on.
Thank you. You have a nice night. Good night, everyone.
Good night.